Let's talk about money. Men and women have been concerned about money since the first coin was fashioned in Asia Minor about 700 BC. You might say that money is like good health, in that we're concerned about it to the extent that we don't have it. The purpose of this message is to get down to the basics, to clear the air surrounding the entire subject of money. And to do this, I'm going to have to get absolutely elementary. And while you may already know most of the things I'm going to say, I think it's important that we remind ourselves just exactly what money is, how much of it is enough, and how to earn the amount of money you need to live the way you want to live, now and in the important future years. To begin, let's get rid of the old myth, once and for all, that money is bad or unimportant. It is not bad, and it is important. It's vitally important. It's just as important as the food and clothes it buys, the shelter it affords, the education it provides, and the doctor's bills it pays. Money is important to any person living in a civilized society. To argue and split hairs to the effect that it's not as important as other things is absurd. Nothing will take the place of money in the area in which money works, and that's all there is to it. What is money? Money is the harvest of our production. Money is what we receive for our production and service as persons, and which we can then use to obtain the production and services of others. We can quite often accurately gauge the extent of our production and service by simply counting the amount of money we receive for it. You'll hear people say, money won't bring happiness. The earning and possession of money has brought a lot more happiness than has poverty. Money is a warm home and healthy children. It's birthday presents and a college education. It's a trip abroad and the means to help older people and the less fortunate. We're not saying that piling up a lot of wealth is important. What we're saying is that money is important because it's the only reward which is completely negotiable and can be used by everyone. Look at it this way. A diamond is more valuable than a lump of coal, yet that's exactly what a diamond was at one time. And just as a lump of coal can be transformed into one of the world's most valuable gems, a human being can vastly increase his or her own value to the world. Try to remember this formula. The amount of money we receive will always be in direct ratio to the demand for what we do, our ability to do it, and the difficulty of replacing us. A highly skilled human being is worth more money in our economy than a person who is not highly skilled and who can be easily replaced. Now, this is not to say that one person is any better than any other person or more important. Remember that in this message, we're only talking about money, nothing else. A janitor is just as important as a human being as a brain surgeon, but the amount of money they'll earn will be proportional to the demand for what they do, their ability to do what they do, and the difficulty of replacing them. A person can be trained to clean and maintain a building in a few weeks, and replacing the person is not difficult. A brain surgeon spent many years learning his profession, often at great personal sacrifice and at extremely high cost, and he cannot be easily replaced. As a result, the surgeon might earn as much money in an hour as a janitor might earn in a year. And these are extreme cases used to show the relation of income to demand, skill, and supply. And this is as it should be. This is why there are few limitations on a person within his or her company and industry. Their incomes will be in exact proportion to the demand for what they do, their ability to do what they do, and the difficulty of replacing them. That's why the whole idea of trying to get something for nothing is ridiculous and won't work. A top jockey will earn a great deal of money every year, which will represent about 10% of the winnings of the horses he rides. You might say riding a horse serves no useful purpose, but the demand is there, useful or not. It's the same with a star in show business. His or her income will very accurately reflect the demand for what he or she does. Now that's why preparation for life is so important. Luck has been defined, as we've mentioned, as what happens when preparedness meets opportunity. A great opportunity will only make the unprepared, the unqualified, appear ridiculous. For every one of us, opportunities are all around us. Our ability to see them will depend in large part on how well we've prepared ourselves. Now, how do you stack up in this regard? While this may sound elementary, you'd be amazed at the number of people who want more money but don't want to take the time and trouble to qualify for it. And until they qualify it, there's no way on earth for them to earn it. It's like the person who wants a good-looking figure but doesn't want to change eating habits. To 9/10 of the world's population, the average North American is already rich. There's a greater difference between the standard of living of most of the world's population and our average worker than there is between the standard enjoyed by our average worker and the richest person in our society. Our working people have just about everything the wealthiest have, only smaller. They have a home, car, often two of them, radio, TV, savings account, debts. They're just smaller. Their food is as good and just as plentiful. Their beds are just as comfortable. Their home is just as warm in the winter. They have exactly the same amount of time and just as much, maybe more, freedom. Their life expectancy at birth is about 75 years. For the rest of the world, on the average, it's less than 60. With only a fraction of the world's population, we in the free world have half the world's total money income. We have more than two-thirds of all the automobiles on the planet. So in talking about money, let's understand that we're already rich as a people. Now, how much do you want? How much money do you need to live the way you want to live, to accomplish the goals you've established for yourself? Most people think they want more money than they really do, and settle for a lot less than they could earn if they went about it the right way. The world will pay you exactly what you bargained for, exactly what you earn, but not a penny more. You remember that old poem that goes, "I bargained with life for a penny, and life would pay no more"? Well, that's about it. We'll receive not what we idly wish for, but what we justly earn. Our rewards will always be in exact proportion to our service. If you don't like your income, you must devise ways and means of increasing your service. Your service must come out of you, your mind, your abilities, and your energy. A strong person cannot make a weak person strong, but a weak person can become strong on his or her own by following a specific course of action for a sufficient length of time. And a person who's already strong can become a lot stronger. It's the same with this business of money. People who refuse to do more than they're being paid for will seldom be paid for more than they're doing. You may have heard someone say, "Why should I knock myself out for the money I'm getting?" Now, it's this attitude which, more than anything else, keeps people at the bottom of the economic pile. They don't understand that only as we grow in value as persons will we receive the increased income we seek. If we try to stand still in our work, and millions do, we'll never know the rewards nor the joy of accomplishment and the personal satisfaction and peace of mind which come only to the person of unusual achievement. There are two distinct steps we must take. First, we must decide how much money we really want, the exact amount. Once this decision is made, the second step is to forget the money and concentrate on improving what we now do. Until we've grown to the size that will fit and naturally earn the income we seek. Once we're fully qualified for the amount of money we decide to earn, we'll soon find ourselves earning it. And we'll also discover that with our new powers and abilities, it's not more difficult, perhaps even less difficult, than what we're now doing for the money we're now earning. Ask yourself, how much money am I perfectly willing to earn? Realizing that the amount I earn will be in exact proportion to my skills, the demand for what I do, and the difficulty of replacing me. There are really three amounts of money people should decide upon. One, the yearly income we want to earn now or in the near future, the amount of money we want to have in a savings and or investment account, and the amount of money we want as a retirement income, whether we ever retire from active work or not. Now, it's here that most people make a very serious mistake. They never decide on any of these three amounts of money. If you will decide on these three amounts, and if you will write them on a card to carry with you or put somewhere where you can review it from time to time, you'll automatically have placed yourself in that top 5% we were talking about. You'll have a plan for your future, a blueprint for future financial accomplishment. You'll know where you're going, and if you're serious about it, you'll most certainly get there. You see, the trouble with people is not in achieving their goals. They can do that all right. It's in not setting goals that people get in trouble. They leave it to chance and find out sooner or later, and to their sorrow, that chance doesn't work, that they've missed the boat. It's estimated that only 5% decide on the money they'll earn and then grow as persons into the size of the incomes they seek. They thus take their lives, their fortunes, and their futures into their own hands, as they should, and accomplish their goals right on schedule all the years of their lives. You can do the same thing, and you can do it starting right now. There are two kinds of people where money's concerned. There's the majority, who cut back on their wants to fit their incomes, and there are those free spirits in the minority who make their incomes fit their wants. Now, which is best for you? You've got to decide that. Ben Franklin gave us the secret to wealth. He said, "The road to wealth lies in augmenting our means or diminishing our wants. Either will do, but the quickest way to wealth is to do both at the same time." When you write down the yearly income you mean to earn, you no doubt know whether or not it's average for the work you're in, or above average. The chances are good that the figure you will decide upon will be above average, perhaps quite a bit above average. That's good. Now ask yourself, who in my line of work is now earning that kind of money? If you know, you'll have a good idea of what you have to do in order to earn it. This is exactly how men and women move from the ranks into positions of top authority with corresponding incomes. I have no way of knowing your line of business, but regardless of the business you're in, it needs new leaders, men and women, to come up in the years ahead. Everything is expanding, getting larger, and with the increase in size and scope, the most desperate need is for the dedicated, able person who can learn to lead the field, and to lead others as well. Some of the top executives in the nation today were once accountants, shipping clerks, struggling lawyers, service station attendants, salespeople in the field, sales clerks, mailroom clerks, stenographers, mechanics. You can't think of a position from which people have not climbed to the top. Now understand what I'm going to say, and it'll bring you and yours everything you want. It's not the job, it's the person. It's not your present circumstances which count, but the circumstances you make up your mind to achieve that are important. The only limit on your income is you. And the income you decide upon can be achieved within the framework of your present work, industry, or profession, where you already have a start and a place. If not there, it can be found somewhere else. All you need is the plan, the roadmap, and the courage to press on to your destination, knowing in advance that there will be problems and setbacks, but knowing also that nothing on earth can stand in the way of a plan backed by persistence and determination. With the income written down that you intend to earn, spend a part of each day thinking of ways in which you can increase your service, knowing that you have only to manage this, and the income will take care of itself. Since the money you want to earn is more than you're now receiving, your part of the bargain is to find ways of increasing your service until the gap has been bridged, and more than bridged. Look at your card with the three amounts written on it. By setting a financial goal, you're demonstrating faith. You'll find that you'll begin to become what others call lucky. You'll begin to get good hunches and ideas. You'll take far more interest in everything about your work and your company. You'll see opportunities in your work and environment you've never noticed before. In fact, you'll soon discover you're no longer the same person. You'll care less about how others are doing their jobs and concern yourself more with the manner in which you do yours. By your example, you'll inspire others to do their jobs better. Have faith in yourself, and the quiet, firm inner knowledge that you can and will accomplish your goals. Know that the answers you seek will come to you in their own time if you only keep looking for them. Above all, realize that money cannot be sought directly. Money, like happiness, is an effect. It's the result of a cause, and the cause is valuable service. Keep money in its proper place. It's a servant, nothing more. It's a tool with which we can live better, see more of the world, give our youngsters the education they need, and a good start in life. It's the means to a happy, carefree retirement in later years. Money is necessary to modern life, but keep it in its place. You need only so much food to enjoy good health. You really need only so much money to live comfortably, securely, and well. Too much emphasis on money reverses the whole picture. You then become the servant, and the money the master. As someone once put it, it's good to have money and the things money can buy, but it's good, too, to check up once in a while and make sure that you haven't lost the things that money can't buy. Every person should know happiness in his or her work and home, and prosperity. These things can and should be yours. Play this message as often as you can during the next week. Fix your plans firmly in your mind and relax. Keep cool and calm. Be as serene as you possibly can be. You have nothing to worry about. Right now, you may have no idea at all how the additional income you seek is going to come to you, nor how you're going to save the amount you want in a savings account, or how you can possibly arrange for the retirement income you've decided upon. That isn't important. Remember that the only really important thing is that you know what you want. If you do, you will become, you must become, what you think about. Be realistic about your financial goals. Or as you reach them, you can then set higher goals. Trying to jump too far too soon can often result in confusion, tension, worry. Take your growth in sensible, logical steps, remembering that the big thing is that you know what you want, and that you realize your rewards will match your service. That is, that you must devise ways and means of actually becoming the person who is worth the amount of money you've established for yourself. Now, a person may be worth more than he or she is getting for a while, but the two will match up. They have to. In fact, unless a person is worth more than he or she is receiving, well, they can't move ahead. They're receiving all they're worth. And it all gets back to the great law that controls everything in the universe, cause and effect. The cause must precede the effect, or the effect cannot occur. This is why people who try to get something for nothing are only fooling themselves and earning the disillusionment and frustration they must one day reap. You can have what you want. You need only make up your mind. I'm sure you'll agree we acquire the skills of living successfully through knowledge. Knowledge, properly applied, is power, and knowledge is available to everybody. The degree of a person's ignorance will determine his or her place in the world. Everyone is born ignorant and must, for a time, live in ignorance. But remember this, anyone who remains ignorant has only himself or herself to blame. An illiterate person in our society is in the lowest level of our social heap. And from that starting point, think once again of society as that pyramid with a broad base gradually rising to a high point. We know that the great majority of people are to be found in the bottom large layers of this pyramid. The higher you go, the smaller the layers. At the very peak of the pyramid, you'll find the world's most brilliant people. We may not have the native equipment to reach the topmost pinnacle, perhaps, although we certainly might, but we do control where we will live between the very top and the very bottom. We can most assuredly get into the top 5%, let's say the top 5 layers of the pyramid, and from here we can live well and successfully all the days of our lives. It isn't that we want to be over anyone, it's just having the ambition and good sense to not settle for anything less. To want to live the best we can. Remember, the higher you climb on a pyramid, the farther you can see, the fresher the air, and the less crowded it becomes. Another rewarding thing about climbing is that as we climb, we help most of those associated with us to climb too. One of the most important ladders leading to the top is knowledge. The more we know, the higher we can move. But where does a person begin? No one person can know everything. In fact, our store of knowledge is growing far too fast for anyone to keep up with it. It's like walking into the Library of Congress with its millions of volumes and trying to decide which single book to read first, knowing that even if you lived 1,000 years, you couldn't read them all. Well, fortunately, the answer to this perplexing problem is known. A person should begin with the study of his language, and then to his general area of interest. 2 steps in that order. It can move us right up there on the top of the pyramid. First, the language, in our case, English. Not enough people realize that it's our ability to use our language which will determine our place on the social pyramid, and which will also control, to a great extent, the amount of money we will earn during our lives. A person may dress in the latest fashion and present a very attractive appearance, so far so good. But the minute he or she opens his or her mouth and begins to speak, he or she proclaims to the world his or her level on our pyramid. Shaw's play Pygmalion, later adapted into the musical comedy My Fair Lady, is an extreme example of what I'm talking about. Our use of the language is the one thing we cannot hide. Many years ago, the graduating class of a large university was given an examination in English vocabulary. The test scores were graded into groups of 5% each, the top 5% and so on to the bottom. At regular intervals during the next 20 years, questionnaires were sent to the surviving graduates, asking them their occupations, incomes, and so on. Without a single exception, those who scored highest on the vocabulary test were in the top income group, while those who scored lowest were in the lowest income group. Reader's Digest published an article by Blake Clark entitled Words Can Work Wonders for You. In it, he wrote, "Tests of more than 350,000 persons from all walks of life show that more often than any other measurable characteristic, knowledge of the exact meanings of a large number of words accompanies outstanding success." End of quote. He also mentioned the work done in this field by scientist Johnson O'Connor and gave O'Connor's best illustration of the importance of vocabulary. Tests were given to executive and supervisory personnel in 39 large manufacturing plants. The results showed that every one of the men tested rated high in the basic aptitudes that go with leadership. Differences in their vocabulary ratings, however, were definite and dramatic. Presidents and vice presidents averaged 236 out of a possible 272 points. Managers averaged 168. Superintendents, 140. Foremen, 114. Floor bosses, 86. In virtually every case, vocabulary correlated with executive level and income. Children with the best vocabularies get the best grades in school. A salesman in his 50s who was in the bottom 5% in vocabulary worked himself into the top 45% and is now vice president of his firm. An encouraging fact to keep in mind, Clark went on to say, is that when we master one word, we find that we've added several others. It's as if the new one is a nucleus of thought around which whirl numerous related ideas that we now come to understand. Deliberately learning 10 new words, we pick up probably 90 more, almost without realizing it. You see, understanding our language is the key to studying and learning everything else. Literally millions of people are being held back in life simply because they've never taken the time to learn their own language. Let's face it, from the earliest times, the favored class of people has always been the educated class. They can make themselves recognized instantly anywhere by the simple expedient of speaking a few words. Our language, more than anything else, determines the extent of our knowledge. You see, everything in all the vast storehouse of knowledge has a name, a label. These names, these words, make up the language. The more words we know and can properly use, the more knowledge we have. Of this you can be sure. A person's knowledge and his language go together. It's almost impossible for one to be larger than the other. Before we move to the second point, which is knowledge in your field of general interest, make it a point to acquire books that will help you improve your vocabulary. You'll find them valuable additions to your library and an enormous help in your career. In addition to vocabulary, effective English usage is important. This entails learning the parts of speech, what they mean, how they should be used to construct sentences. This, too, is a reflection of your present knowledge. Right now, mentally rate yourself on your use of the language. Would you say your rating would be excellent, good, fair, or poor? If you rated yourself excellent, you're in the top 0.1% of the population. If you said good, you're definitely in the top 5%. If you rated yourself fair, get a good book on English at your bookstore and study it. And if you rated yourself as poor, take a home study or night course in English. Many excellent courses are available. Impress on your youngsters the importance of knowing their language, the importance of speech. More people speak English now than any other language on the planet, with the possible exception of Chinese. English literature, from Chaucer to Eliot, from Shakespeare to Hemingway, is the richest and most extensive on earth. So when you're studying English, you're studying one of the world's greatest and most interesting subjects. If you think you don't have time to study, listen to what Lewis Shores has to say about this. He said each of us must find his own 15-minute period each day for reading. It's better if it's regular. The only requirement is the will to read. With it, you can find 15 minutes no matter how busy the day. That means you'll read half a book a week, 2 books a month, 20 a year, and 1,000 in a reading lifetime. It's an easy way to become well-read, and it takes just 15 minutes a day. Now let's get to our second area of study, our general interest. Everyone has something in which he or she is interested more than in other subjects. This is true of the salesperson, doctor, architect, executive, or student. Reading in this area is for profit, and we should read for pleasure as well. Once we have a regular program going along to improve our knowledge of our language, we should begin a systematic study of the field which interests us most and which will help us reach our goal just that much sooner. I received a letter from one of my radio listeners, a woman, saying it was her ambition to write poetry. There was a telephone number on her letter, so I called her. I asked her how long she'd been studying poetry and what kind of a collection of published poetry she had. She told me she didn't have a single book on poetry and had never read it as a study. I mention this because it's so often the case. People will say they want to do a particular thing, but a bit of questioning quickly reveals that it's a whim, not a real and important goal. If we're interested in boating, we subscribe to boating magazines and usually have a collection of books on boating. Stories of the Sea, a collection of the works of Conrad, and we usually know, down to the bilge pumps and mooring lines, exactly the kind of boat we want. I know because I have such a collection. I also have a wonderful collection of books on English, including poetry, great fiction, the great books, several excellent dictionaries, and a number of books on writing and style, and mistakes to avoid. Our company has published on tape cassette one of the finest programs on vocabulary building ever put together, and you can listen to it and repeat the words as you drive your car. Other motorists might think you're a bit batty, but you'll be learning in the best way possible by listening and repeating a fine vocabulary of the English language. Most languages can number their words under 200,000. The English language has more than 600,000 and is still growing every day. None of us can learn them all, although professors of English come very close. Incidentally, the number two person in the country in the use of his language is the corporation president, and that's no accident. Our ability to translate our thoughts and ideas into words in a powerful and effective way is inextricably linked to our growth in the world of business or any other organization. In addition to English, each of us should have a good working knowledge of world history, and especially the history of our own country and the history of the idea of human freedom. Millions of Americans don't know how truly fortunate they are to be able to openly criticize their government and its leaders, to be able to bring suit against public officials, to call an attorney of their choice in case of arrest and be judged by a jury of their peers. Did you know that as far as is known, there has never been a sentence of innocent in the Soviet court? If you go to trial in Russia, believe me, you're guilty, and you're going to prison or a work camp. In hundreds of countries, you could be subjected to torture without recourse. My wife and I were talking to a couple in South Africa some years ago, a white couple, and they said to us with feeling, "My God, when the plane lands in the United States, you can smell the freedom." Most Americans, believe it or not, don't know anything about the idea of personal liberty, nor how difficult it was to come by, nor how precious it is, nor do they have the foggiest notion of their true options and opportunities. I think a good personal library is essential. It should contain good books and a dozen or so excellent tape cassette programs. The tape cassette is the greatest idea for learning since the invention of the printing press. It's effortless, yet so effective. When you listen to the human voice, you're learning the way you learned most of what you know. It's the most natural way to learn. And while a book is often read only once, tape cassettes can be listened to over and over again, months and years later. And perhaps most importantly, they can be listened to while doing other things, while dressing in the morning, while driving the car, while having a snack or at the dinner table, so that the entire family can soak up some information. Those without a good library, and they don't even build bookshelves in American homes anymore, unless they're specified by an architect, they're seriously handicapped. They miss so much of the fun, the joy of learning the things we want to learn, Books and cassettes are not an expense item. They're an investment. And as far as we know, the best investment on earth. They pay us dividends out of all proportion to their small cost. And not just in pleasure and knowledge, but in cash, in income. As someone has written, books extend our narrow present back into the limitless past. They show us the mistakes of the men and women before us and share with us recipes for human success. There's nothing to be done which books, and let me add tape cassettes, will not help us do much better. To try to live without constantly expanding our knowledge is to close our eyes not just to the whole purpose of life, but to the facts of life as well. Never before has the world moved so rapidly as it's moving today. We must make up our minds to move with it, to stay up with it, to grow and prosper with it, or just fall by the wayside. Not just because it's the best way to our goals, but because it's the way to really enjoy living, as the skillful sailor enjoys the sea. So often a person will live in the shallows from force of habit, or because those around him are wasting their time without realizing that only a thin screen of reeds separates him from the fine deep ocean beyond. He or she can sail to any chosen port if the time has been taken and the effort expended to build a good boat. Now let me make an important point. The person who knows where he or she is going and who's made up his or her mind to get there is going to make the grade regardless of education. If an education is necessary to the accomplishment of the goal, well, he or she will get it. Nothing in the world can take the place of persistence and determination. I think it's important to succeed in every department of our lives, and becoming well-educated is one of the most vital. What good is a large material success if a person has remained too ignorant to enjoy it or to administer it? Now let's recap. Knowledge is power. The more our knowledge, the more power we can exercise over our lives and our futures. Think of human society as a pyramid composed of layers beginning with a broad base and narrowing to a pinnacle at the top. Pick the place on the pyramid you're going to shoot for and start climbing. Since there's far too much knowledge for any one person to assimilate, where can we start? First, with our language, and next, with our general area of interest, two subjects which can keep us growing and interested for the rest of our lives. Remember that our language is the one thing we cannot hide except by silence. Let's bring it up to the point where it can do the job for us we want it to do. To a surprising extent, our ability to use our language and the extent of our vocabulary will determine our income and our future. Use our excellent cassette programs in vocabulary building, and spend at least 15 minutes every day reading something, not only interesting, but calculated to stretch your mind a little more. Remember that a mind stretched by a new idea can never again return to its original dimensions. It's estimated that the average person adds only 5 new words a year to his or her vocabulary. That's not nearly enough for this day and age. We should add that many a week. Many popular magazines publish features which will help you in this area. And finally, realize that graduating from school is just the beginning, the commencement of our days and years of learning. For with wisdom will come kindness and patience, love, understanding, and success as a person. It's never too late to begin.